It's the time of the year when the winds howl and the nights get longer, and as the chilly weather settles over the state, it's time for some old-fashioned ghost stories. Tales of faceless voices talking to families, haunted music boxes, and friendly ghosts helping with genealogical research. Wisconsin is chock full of spooky tales. Just in time for Halloween, our guest is here to share some ghost stories and talk about haunted sites around the state. Michael Norman is the author of a dozen books, including Haunted Wisconsin and Haunted Heartland. He's also a retired journalism professor at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls. Michael, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, you write in the preface to a later edition of your book on Haunted Wisconsin. You went in wondering, well, are there that many stories out there? Are people going to share the stories? You got an answer. They sure were, it sounds like.
Well, they did, and that was the main question that my late co-author and I had to answer when we decided to write a book of ghost stories, not fiction where we would make them up, but rather look around the countryside, around the state, and see if haunted Wisconsin was the most haunted state in the United States, had more ghosts per square mile than any other state, as Dr. Bob Gard claimed in one of his books of Wisconsin folklore.
I know there's no federal department of the paranormal, as far as we know, but do you buy that? Are we particularly haunted here in Wisconsin?
Oh, I don't know. I think that was a folklorist doing a little bit of exaggeration. I think you may find stories like this all over if you just go looking, and that's what we did. It was 38 years ago, actually, this Halloween, that the first edition came out. And, you know, based on interviews, a lot of research, a lot of, you know, going into archives because, you know, we found, for instance, that the 19th century, you know, understandably was just chock-a-block full of ghost stories, but that came from, you know, people having to rely on their feet or horses back or wagon to get any place through the wilderness.
And now you're looking to collect these stories in these books. You're not out to prove these happened or to debunk them or anything like that, right?
Exactly. I'm a ghost writer, not a ghost hunter. You know, and we made that decision early on. What we wanted to do, and I continue to do now all these years later, is look at it from, you know, not precisely a journalistic or a reporting standpoint, but, you know, from the standpoint of let's see what the facts are, what can we find out, you know, through interviews, through, you know, old-fashioned research, you know, about the stories. A lot of them, you know, we ended up not using because we weren't able to verify anything. And even, you know, and that applies to today. You know, I hear a lot of stories that a certain intersection is haunted or a building is haunted. But then when you start, you know, sort of chopping away, you can't confirm it in any way. And that is find somebody who has an actual incident or through, you know, other kinds of research.
And a funny thing happened between editions of the book. Some people will have what they think is a ghostly encounter and then later on discover that you'd written about that location in the past. And somebody says, oh, you know, in that book, something like that happened here before.
Exactly. You know, we've heard, you know, from people who have added, you know, a tale or a story that, you know, has gone in. This is the third edition that came out a few years ago from the University of Wisconsin Press. So, you know, it's been a long while, and individuals discover that an experience they had was something that was mirrored in the book. And so if it turned out to be appropriate, yeah, I included it.
Talking to Michael Norman, author of Haunted Wisconsin. We're getting some spooky stories from around the state leading up to Halloween. If you've got one, by the way, or in your home, in your community, a local legend, you can share it with us at 800-642-1234. Michael, I met you actually some years back. I was with the Joy Cardine Show. We did a show from River Falls, and I seem to recall you pointed out some UW River Falls campus folklore for us. Do you want to share one of those?
Yeah, there actually are a couple of stories from this campus. You find colleges, many colleges are replete with ghost stories. And on this particular campus, there's a story of a custodian who heard a basketball game going on in a part of the building where there should not have been anything going on. It was an old gym that hadn't been used in some time. And she went down to check things out, open the door. And there was kind of a ghostly number of basketball players that just faded away and nearly scared her to death. There's a theater. The theater has a story connected to it about the ghost of a man who helped design the theater. And I heard that story from a theater professor who I finally was able to persuade to tell me the story of his encounter one night with a man who turned out to be, he thinks, the ghost of this particular individual. Mm. So, you know, stories sometimes are all around you if you know, you know, where to look, and also understand that, that sometimes people aren't real anxious to share the story, especially in a public way. You know, there's still that feeling that, well, you've seen ghosts, it's like seeing UFOs or the Yeti or something.
You were going to share, I think, a couple stories from the book. Let's start with one, a good site for a ghost story, a graveyard. You've got one you headline, Do Not Disturb, in the book.
Yeah, this was an interesting story because it came to me from the man involved in the story, who is the central character in the story, some years ago, and it stretches all the way back to the 1930s. Do you have time for a short reading?
It's Halloween. We want a little ghost story.
Well, the story goes: old Teddy King grunted and sweated as he dug into the Knapp Cemetery plot that held his mother's coffin. With each swing of his shovel, Teddy slowly cleared away nearly 30 years of dirt and stone so that he could move his mother's remains to another graveyard. It was late August, 1936. St. Croix County officials had ordered the graves moved. A new road was going to be built, and the county needed the cemetery as part of the right-of-way. Most of the remains had been transferred earlier in the month. Mrs. King was the last one to leave. The old man rustled the moldy casket into a makeshift wheelbarrow and set off down the road. Now, watching all this was one Lloyd Owens, a young man who was working that summer at the Al Larson farm, just crossways from the cemetery. Curiosity is the compelling affliction of the young. That's what persuaded Lloyd to cross the road to Mrs. King's empty grave. He shivered as he looked down into the damp hole. As he poked around in the fresh dirt with the toe of his boot, something shiny caught his eye. Lloyd picked it up, cleaned it off, and held it up to the fading sunlight. It was a pink glass coffin handle. It came from Mrs. King's coffin, he thought. I'll give it to Teddy next time I see him in town. He stuffed the object in the pocket of his bib overalls and trotted back to the Larson house and on up to his room. He put the handle on the top of his dresser. Lloyd did not sleep well that night. I'll leave it there.
Sure. So give us the story of what happened next to Lloyd. That was a good tease for the story there. He ultimately decided he ought to return this thing, right? What happened to him between?
It kept moving, shall we say. I don't want to give away the story.
Sure. Okay.
Point. It didn't stay put. And in fact, not long ago, someone said that reminded them of the movie Poltergeist. You know, you should not disturb someone's grave. And that's kind of a common motif.
Now, do you get a lot of stories from people related to graves and cemeteries?
Yes. And actually, very few stories that I've ended up including in any of my books take place in cemeteries. I think that in order for life maybe to take place in ghostly form, it has to occur at a place where there was life during during a lifetime. And cemeteries can be kind of scary places, but at the same time, in Europe, graveyards are used for picnics. So I think it depends on your attitude.
We're talking to Michael Norman. He's the author of a dozen books, including Haunted Wisconsin and Haunted Heartland. He's also a retired journalism professor at UW River Falls. He's with us to talk about haunted sites in Wisconsin and local ghost stories. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a haunted story you'd like to share, or do you have a question about local Wisconsin hauntings? Is there a legend in your community? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farid. Right now, we continue our conversation about Wisconsin ghost stories with Michael Norman. He's the author of a dozen books, including Haunted Wisconsin. He's a professor emeritus of journalism at UW River Falls, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Does your family, does your town have a ghost story of its own? Call 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Roger is with us in La Crosse. Roger, hi. What do you got for us?
Hi, yeah. So when I was a teenager, I grew up in Waupaca, Wisconsin, and there's a nearby town, Wauwega. And there's this gravel road called Marsh Road. And on either side of the road is just swamp. And there was this legend that right at the end of the road, there's a house. I think there's one house on the whole road. And then it's just swamp. And there was a legend that this farmer lived in a house, and he had this prized albino goat. And this road is also a popular party spot for kids. And some kids were driving down the road, and they hit his goat. And he tracked them down. They just went down the road to party and killed them all and killed himself. So the legend was, if you're driving down this road, reckless, and you turn your lights on and off three times, a goat will appear in front of your car. You'll run off the road into the swamp, and this farmer, his spear will come and kill you. So me and my buddy were driving down the road. We knew about the legend. I kept trying to tell him, turn your lights, do it, do it. And he's like, no. So I reached over and turned his lights off, and he turned them back on. I'm like, all right, we did it once. You got to do it twice now. So he turned them off and on, turned them off. And when he turned them on again, there was a deer in front of us. It scared the crap out of me. I jumped across, hit his arm. He swerved. We went into the ditch. And we were just sitting there freaking out. Like, you got to get out. No, you got to get out. Check this out.
Well, I'm glad you lived to tell the tale, Roger. Maybe a self-fulfilling prophecy there. I don't know. Michael, are there a lot of stories like this? Like, if you go into this building or this street, you do this thing, the ghost, goat or otherwise, will appear?
Sure. You find quite a few like that. And first, a goat I've heard about. So, those are common. The one that's most often heard is a variation of the hook. The couple out, kissing and whatnot in the car, and they had the radio on low. I guess that's when there were radios in cars. A news bulletin comes on that an escaped convict, is on the loose. Be careful, watch yourself. Don't go parking in lovers' lanes because he could be dangerous, and he's known for the fact that his right hand is a hook, and they hear something scratching at the outside of the car. They take off, get to her house, and they find the hook stuck in the door. That's kind of the common motif like that. I think many of these stories are created maybe to either warn young people, stay on the straight and narrow, or to stay away from someplace. It's hard. If it sounds like there's some facts connected to it, yeah, it's pretty easy to track down if you want to. Maybe you want to stick with the legend and not, track down the truth of the, if there was a mass murder, some guy killed his children, that surely made the newspapers sometime. So.
All right, Roger, you can live with the legend or try to track it down. We'll go next to Wanda in Fond du Lac. Wanda, hello.
Hi, me and my husband, this is in Fond du Lac at the train station. There's an old train station there, and my husband and I, neither of us believe in ghosts, whatever. There's one guy doing paperwork. It's a real long building, and it was a furniture store. So we were looking for, I don't remember what, but we were walking, it's just a hallway down the middle and furniture on both sides. We get all the way to the end and had to turn around, and when we turned around, there was a heavy, a heavy chair right in the middle of the hallway. I mean, you literally can look the whole way down the station, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
There was nobody there, absolutely nobody. Me and him looked at each other. We stepped over the chair, and needless to say, we never bought furniture there.
Wanda, yeah, you don't want the haunted furniture. And Michael, there's a lot of stories in your book of ghosts who do little things, not necessarily helpful, not necessarily harmful. They just, people say, make their presence known, I guess, like the old train station furniture ghost.
Right, exactly. You know, they move furniture around. They cause a rocker to rock, you know, that sort of thing. Playful, you know, playful ghosts. If it is a ghost, unless somebody is actually, you know, playing a trick on you. Many of these stories, you know, if it goes on for a while, you know, they talk about a poltergeist being a noisy ghost. And some of those are interesting that I was able to find, especially in the old days. There was one in particular from St. Croix County, Katy Township, in which a family was beset by poltergeists or you know, things, axes being thrown and clothing being cut up, you know, to the extent that it was, you know, reporters and editors from newspapers all around the region ended up showing up at this house waiting to see the poltergeist in action. Yeah, that was great entertainment 100 years ago.
Thanks a lot for the call, Wanda. We'll go next to Jim with us in Madison. Jim, hi. Jim, are you there? We don't have Jim. Jim wanted to know if Whitewater was known as Salem Triangle. Have you heard a lot of stories in the Whitewater area, Michael?
I'm sorry, I didn't. It was known as what?
Whitewater, known as the Salem Triangle, I guess, like the Salem witch trials and whatnot. Have you do you have any stories from the Whitewater area?
That's Salem Triangle is a new one for me. Whitewater in the 19th century was very well known for its spiritualism, for being kind of a center of what at one time was called spiritualism, the Spiritualist Church, and has several of those. So maybe they grew out of that.
Interesting. We are talking to Michael Norman, author of Haunted Wisconsin, among other books, sharing some Wisconsin ghost stories this time of year. We'll go next to Ryan in Onalaska. Ryan, hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Ryan?
I witnessed the Highway 12 hitchhiker in his green slicker. I was driving from Black Earth, Wisconsin, up to the La Crosse area on Alaska, and it kind of blew my mind. But I didn't know about it until afterwards when I actually read the book.
All right, the Phantom Hitchhiker in the Baraboo area, Michael.
There are Phantom Hitchhikers all over. That's a very common motif. The one outside Baraboo, I'm not familiar with. I'll have to look into that.
All right, Ryan, thanks a lot for that call. But that idea of the hitchhiker, I mean, there's a great Twilight Zone episode that I can't think of too closely with a phantom hitchhiker in it. That's a story that comes up in different places, Michael?
Yes, absolutely. A phantom hitchhiker, there's always several versions of that. The Ridgeway Ghost is kind of a phantom hitchhiker type of thing, which is probably if people know a ghost story in Wisconsin, it's probably the Ridgeway Ghost in the southwestern part of the state. There are, you know, phantom hitchhikers. As I said, it's a common motif.
Tell us a little more about the Ridgeway Ghost.
Well, that's a ghost that goes back to the early 19th century. As I said, it's probably if people know a ghost story from Wisconsin, it's probably that one. I like it. It's a shapeshifter. It's a ghost that is said to change shapes, and including a goat. It sometimes is seen as a goat,
uh-huh,
owl, a pig, even a horse, as well as a human being. It's a story that has, I would say, dozens and dozens of, you know, variations to it. It has over the years. It's in that area on, Highway 18 and 151 between Madison and Blue Mountains and Dodgeville, that area.
And Michael, in our last couple minutes, obviously there's something about us as humans that likes a ghost story. Whether we believe in the stories or not, we want to hear them. What is it? What is it about ghost stories that we find appealing, entertaining? What?
Well, I think it deals to a certain extent with a great unanswered question, and that is, what happens to us when we die? Is there a possibility that some part of us survives, spirit, form, something? I think that is maybe fundamentally the reason we enjoy them. I think we like being scared, but we only like being scared in the comfort of our own home, or someplace where we are not in real physical danger is not fun. Nobody wants to do that, but to sort of have that delightful shiver, is always a good idea, or it's an idea that many of us enjoy doing that. But I think it's it could be entertaining. The stories, some individuals, that read my book say, well, these aren't horrible. Most ghost stories are not. I don't want to necessarily call them gentle ghosts, but horror rarely happens in a story that sounds like it could be true or it could be accurate. So I think those are a few of the reasons.
Michael, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Rob. It's been a delight.
That's Michael Norman. He's the author of a dozen books, including Haunted Wisconsin and Haunted Heartland. He's also a retired journalism professor at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls. He joined us to talk about haunted sites in Wisconsin and share some local ghost stories around the state. You can still share your local legend over on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Is there a ghost in your town?